And we're live with our 310th episode of Absolute AppSec. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, joined by my co-host, Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. We're really excited to have the team from Era Security on with us today. We'll be diving into their background and what they're trying to accomplish over there here shortly. Before we dig into that, just a couple of announcements. I know we've talked about it a couple of times, but there are a few opportunities of training in front of you for both harnessing LLMs for application security, which will be taught at KernelCon, and also at DEF CON Singapore. So that's in April. And I mean, I guess both of those courses are in April, to be honest. And then we will be doing the 4-day intensive course at Black Hat, next gen. What are we calling it? Next gen secure code review and AI or whatever, something like that, where we do a deep dive into both the secure code review process and how to instrument that using LLMs, like with the basics. So it's a combination of all the courses that we've taught over the last couple of years. We try to take and shove 4 days of content, or probably more like 6 days of content into 4 days. And yeah, that goes, it's a lot, right? But it is your opportunity to jump into those courses. We're excited to kick those off for this year. We haven't taught any other courses, or we don't have anything else planned at the moment, but there may be something else that comes along. We've got other ideas. Outside of that, Ken and I will be at B-Side San Francisco and at RSA. There's going to be some happy hour events. There's going to be an Absolute AppSec get together. We will be running a panel at B-Side San Francisco with Clint Gibler and a couple of others. We're trying to solidify who exactly that's going to be, all on AppSec and AI, similar to what we've been talking about for a while, but also what we're going to be talking about with the Era Security folks today. Anything else, Ken? Any other places that you want to promote right now before we jump into it?
Yeah, I think we're good. Yeah.
Okay. Well, with that, welcome to Mohan and Naveen from Era Security. This has been in the works for a while, and I know Ken was the one that initially initiated the conversation with both of you. But let's get into it. Now, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Actually, sorry. Before you go, I will give you a little bit of like the reason, the setup, and then we'll get into. Sorry, we don't normally do this. So that's why Seth went right to you. But today I'm going to interrupt it because to give a background, I first met Mohan, I believe at RSA. I want to say, I think it was RSA of last year. Is that correct?
Yeah. Pretty much. Okay. We've been meeting RSA, Black Hat, everywhere.
Yeah, and at the time we were like us, Dryrun, we obviously have a lot of AI stuff that we do. So keeping guardrails around that, keeping it secure and keeping our MCP server protected and things of that nature, really, really important to us. So we were kind of looking for vendors, and there was like not really a lot of vendors at that time, believe it or not. Like that's how quickly things have really moved. So then got to know Mohan, and just as a person, I was really, really impressed. And then Pete on our team and I started looking at their product, started using their product, really impressed for a lot of reasons, which we can get into. But anyways, point is that I really liked Mohan, really liked Naveen, because I met Naveen later, really liked the product, kept talking to them. Now, obviously, we use them and whatnot. And I don't know. I just thought of all the companies I've seen come out, of all the people that I've seen come out, these were folks that I actually felt like, you could believe in, and actually building something of value. Not to say that other companies aren't, but we all know how this industry goes. There's some real players, and there's people that try to make some money, right? So we'll leave it at that. But in any case, so I just wanted for people to kind of get to know. Mohan's been on the and Naveen have been on the Boring podcast most recently, I believe, the Boring AppSec podcast. Is that correct?
Not yet, Ken. Like, we haven't spoken at the Boring podcast yet, but we've been there in a few other podcasts. I was in Cloud Security podcast from Ashish.
That's the one. Yeah, I'm sorry. So you did that how long ago?
That's like 7 months ago.
Oh man. Oh man. Well, yeah, I feel like you have a lot of value to add. I feel like you have a lot to say, and you and Naveen both. And so anyways, just thought it'd be great to have you guys on. We can pick your brain, get to know you, get to know your background. You guys have some interesting stories. So with all that having been said, introduce yourselves.
Thanks, Ken, for the kind words. We truly appreciate it, and we totally enjoy working with you anyway. So aside from that, thanks for having us, Seth and Ken, on this show. We are, I generally, got into cybersecurity organically right after my bachelor's, been in this space for around 15 years. I did like from offensive to defensive, more recently, I was doing production security at Box. I responded to nation state cyber attacks and several ransomware attacks back while I was at Morgan Stanley. I juggled between incident response and product security space. In last 3 years, mainly right after ChatGPT launch, Box rolled out Box AI products, and then I got to put my hands dirty into AI security. Here we are, along with Naveen. That's where I met Naveen at Box almost 7 years ago. We built a lot of internal tools together. We spoke at several cybersecurity conferences. When we were trying to look what's out there, to secure what's coming up with AI and agents specifically, we see there is, tons of misconception and, a lot of them are not adding real value. So that's where we felt, hey, let's go build this ship. So that's how we got into Aira Security.
Yeah, cool. So I have close to 10 years of experience in AppSec with, last 2 to 2.5 years of focusing on AI security. So before Aira, I worked at Amazon Services, where I designed the security controls for agentic services and Bedrock agent code. I also have 5 patents in agentic security space. And like Mohan mentioned, we both met at Box. When I started seeing all these problems, I couldn't find a better person than Mohan. So that's when I just called him and said, hey, here's the problem I've been seeing. And Mohan was also leading Box AI security at Box. So we both were talking about different problems in the space, how different tools out there, only checking the issues at surface level, not going in deep and missing a ton of issues that can be caught early. And that's when we realized, we need to build a product that can solve this problem for people out there. So we started Aira Security from there. And thanks, Ken. Thanks, Seth. Thanks for having me and Mohan here. And especially Ken, thank you so much for all the insight that you have shared the things that we learned from you really helped us shape our product in a better way. So thank you so much for bringing that up.
You guys are. That's the thing I really like about you all. It's like, Seth, you know how this is. When you have somebody who is a practitioner building things, mm-hmm. the outcome's always way better than a business person trying to hire third party contractors out of Ukraine or wherever to build a thing so they can launch a site real quick and get more funding in another round. It's like totally different models there, where you have people that are actually understand the problem space, get what people need. And so anyways, that's one reason I thought it'd be awesome to have you guys on. But yeah, your story is very interesting too. And we'll get into more of the AWS journey and all that. But I guess where I'd like to start is kind of just figuring out, and Seth, I'm sorry, if you have questions, interject.
Go ahead.
I definitely wanted to hear just sort of what was the reason that you felt like getting into this space? It's a gamble for sure, right? At least at the time that you decided to launch this, it felt like a gamble.
I can go. So I think the main reason we see is, the shift, right? Like originally, you know, the ship, it was just more like a, you know, usage of Gen AI, where we are trying to produce content. And then from there, we see, you know, after generating content, we moved into this, you know, agent world where, you know, we can delegate tasks to, you know, to LLM to orchestrate a lot of things. So, and we see a lot of economic value that's shifting in this space. And, you know, like a lot of people are really, you know, leveraging this to get really, you know, time back of their life. You know, like I was talking to one non-developer, like, who are nothing to do with anything technology, but still they are building some workflows that can make their life better. And, you know, these are like real world examples that we really see with this shift in last couple of years. And then, you know, there is no way to secure them today. And we do care about, you know, the security all the time. And when we see this shift, we thought, hey, you know, there should be something existing to tackle this shift. And that's what motivated us to build Aira. And that's why we exist. Like, we exist mainly ensuring that, you know, the agents are doing this thing that it's supposed to do. And we want to have an enforcement layer within their intent, not just how they access things. So, because we've seen a lot of surprises when we were, you know, doing a lot of research, that even if you have an agent with right access, it might still, you know, end up in doing some unintended outcomes that can lead to, like, you know, dangerous things. So those are the, you know, the real core reason, like, why we are into this problem, Ken.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, but the question is, do you see agents, like, so there's agents going beyond and above and beyond their scope because they made a mistake internally. They went off the correct path. There's also influence from, you know, threat actors. What do you see, like, more of, or more risk of, or more likelihood of, or, you know, is it one or the other? Is it pretty even between, yeah, threat actors and, you know, attacking agents or getting agents to do things they weren't intended to do? Or is it more of agents themselves inherently have, you know, poor behavior, we'll say, or something like that?
Yeah, I would say it's a mix of both. I would let Naveen to deep dive there, but definitely, you know, we are seeing both patterns, but the new pattern is, you know, agent itself, you know, getting into, you know, unintended outcomes just because it's just, you know, following its rules. Yeah, so it's a mix of both, in my opinion.
Yeah, like Mohan mentioned, it's like a bit of both. I would say, like, especially like in the recent months, we are seeing like more attack patterns in the later approach, where the agent themselves reasoning to do something bad just to finish things faster. For example, the main risk that we are seeing in agentic space right now is the reasoning drift. The agent reasons itself to do XYZ so that it can finish things faster, or it can take a shortcut and let the users know that hey, I have completed this task by taking a shortcut. Whereas the rules or the user might not even ask the agent to take the shortcut in the first place. So I think it's more like the model itself reasoning to take a shortcut and finishing the task, which lead to some threats or like risks that can be exploited by people out there. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. So, you say that they're going off course, can you explain? So, like, you're saying that, for instance, an agent might take a shortcut. You said so. An agent might, like, decide that even though it's given maybe some instructions on tool usage, that it might see like perhaps another way to call that same tool or another tool, especially like something that allows for system commands or something like that. They might take that shortcut path and instead of following the paved path, we'll say. And so then not necessarily, is that malicious? Would you consider that malicious, or would you consider that just LLMs being LLMs and trying to put together a good plan for what to do and then kind of screwing it up?
Yeah, it's the latter, definitely. For example, we can think of like an employee who's like super productive and they always want to finish things faster, who might miss a step here and there, not with malicious intent, but just to be super productive and getting things faster. So agent is like the same employee, but like, you know, 1000x when compared to them, because agent never sleeps, right? So for example, agent is always trying to be more helpful, or by finishing things faster, or being more providing more information to the users. So for example, agent might have access to two different services. The user might ask information about service A. Since the agent has access to both the services for various different purposes, it kind of tells itself, oh, the user is asking about service A. Since I already know about service B, which is related to service A, so now let me combine both and give like a better information to the user. However, the user should not know about user B, because it might be a sensitive information which should not be shared to like all the employees except a small group of employees like working on that sensitive project. So this is just one use case, but there are a ton of use cases where agent decisions or like the reasoning the agent takes can lead to like catastrophic decisions, which can lead to a lot of bad things out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'd like to add a couple of points because someone wanted to answer this question.
So. Yeah, you're good. Mohan, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I guess to the point of Ken, it's although the malicious intent is not explicit, but the outcome over the time, it turns out to be malicious when it takes shortcuts, Ken and said. The reason behind is, you know, like we've been, you know, talking to a few, life sciences organizations who are exploring agents. And, you know, in what we are seeing there is, there are so many complaints, right? Like FDAs and a lot of things goes in when it comes to like drug discovery, clinical research, and all those aspects. So, you know, in those use cases, those unintended malicious, non-malicious actions over the time, it turns out to be a malicious action, just because the output and the task that it is producing over the time becomes messy, and they have to even dump the entire project just because the data become inaccurate over the time. So because right now when we talk about agents, and also we'll set different tone here, right? Agents comes in variety of ways, variety use cases. It can be, introduced in an organization through a SaaS platform, or even their own, application is powered by agentic workflow, or just a developer in an organization is running Cloud Code or Cursor, who is spinning up some agentic workflow. So, there are several varieties how agent is being slowly leveraged in an organization. So that's why like when we say few things, it's applicable to few use cases as well. So but overall, from what we are seeing and the research and with our design partners, we as a security person, we also should care about those initial small tiny non-malicious actions that can end up being a huge deal. So that's something I started to make up. Yeah, go on, Seth.
Yeah, I wanted to highlight exactly what you're saying, Mohan, because I like anyone that's dealing with LLM sees this reasoning drift, right? Like, especially when with these long running agentic flows and everything else that's going on with them. I always go back to, okay, you know, we attribute that, like we're giving it a malicious tag right now, but realistically, if we're looking at the core information security, you know, pillars, right? Like your CIA triad, confidentiality, integrity, and availability, integrity of the data, what you're dealing with, we're starting to talk more about almost safety than we are security, right? Like there, you know, especially in the context of health decisions or physical like interactions with the physical world, you know, other, I mean, I think about cars and the AIs that they put into Tesla and other things, right? Like you make a bad decision, you start going down this pathway and all of a sudden, you know, the car's ramming into, like there's actual physical harm that is associated with that. And so it becomes a very interesting problem on how to unwind that. I posted an academic paper that I found interesting from late last year that also like is exploring this idea of how do we actually maintain safety guardrails along these flows when any one decision isn't necessarily bad in and of itself, right? Yeah. Like the constant need to monitor what's going on becomes important there. And I think that's part of what you're getting after, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. Yeah, like you said, Seth, the actions might look legit, but when you combine all those actions together, it can lead to something bad. And so most tools out there, they only check who is trying to access, what they're trying to access, but they are not checking the why part. That is where the actual risk lies. So when we started AIRA, so we tailor-made our solution such a way that we also check the why part in addition to what and who, so that we can validate the intent before we let that happen. So for example, before a tool call happens or before the agent is trying to retrieve something from memory, and we will check whether the intent is being changed, which changes the original business mission or not. And then we will let the agent know, hey, this tool response contains something malicious, which is not aligning with the original user request. So please take a look at it. Or sometimes if the risk score is super high, we will also trigger human in the loop. So the agent will ask the human to review that particular action before it can take. So these are some of the things that that we are coming up with to solve the intent problem. And like you said, like guardrails, like you know, human in the loop. These are different things that that we can come up with as a solution for this reasoning diff problem that we are facing within the agency world.
So my question there is like, what have you found most effective, right? Like obviously human in the loop, like a human to retrain and to refocus that attention or restarting the agent, I guess. But like, what have you found in practice is the most efficient solution to actually solving that, those pathways and it going off the rails?
It's like a bit of both. We can share about how we are solving this problem. So we do something called like trajectory analysis. We see how the agent is taking its path to complete the mission from the user. At any given point in the trajectory, if the path is deviating from the original mission, we will flag it as malicious, and then we will tell the agent, hey, do not do this action for XYZ reasons, right? And there are some criteria that we have created, which can also be customized based on the customer needs. They can say if the risk score is greater than 9, or if the risk falls under so-and-so category, for example, data exfiltration, or it can be command injection, whatever that category is, they can say trigger human in the loop. So that the user or like the agent developer, they can take a look at it, and then they can decide whether to let it go or not. And whatever action they take, we try to take the feedback And then we try to, you know, keep that in mind for future reviews. So the next time when the same request comes to us or something similar comes to us, we will know this is what the user has taken, and we will automatically decide what are the user have chosen, whether to allow the request or block the request. We do the same thing, and then we will let the agent know, and then the call will be either denied or allowed to the particular to an endpoint, for example. Yeah.
Makes sense, right? Like it's a learning process, right? Like, and I still feel like this, right? Like, we have this discussion all the time about how AI right now is the worst it's ever going to be, right? Like the way that we're like the agents are operating, how naive they are. I mean, even if we look back 6 months, a year, and how they operated back then and how LLMs responded, it's pretty awful compared to how, where we were at today. So it's going to continually get better. I mean, it almost feels like you're training an AI on top of the AI, right, to actually make that decisioning to keep it, keep the guardrails in place, right?
Maybe one thing I'd like to add, Seth. So that's why, like, we also, like, we do this hybrid approach. So, like, you know, while many approach only, like, you know, taking AI to deal with AI, we come up with this hybrid approach, you know, where, you know, we will have something like, you know, mimicking like a human brain, like how a human brain would think, you know, right off the bat, like we have muscle memory, right? Like, and then we do instantly a few things that, you know, like, let's say the moment you go close to a fire, like our reflex action, you know, works, and then, you know, you don't even touch the fire, right? Similarly, you know, we hone in some of these, you know, architecture into how, you know, into our solution, where, you know, we can, you know, stop those, you know, known bad right immediately, and then, you know, use the trajectory analysis that Naveen mentioned about, you know, that he's looking for the, you know, the path, and then, you know, is it aligning to the goal, etc. So again, it's a hugely evolving space, and we are doing so many research in this, how we can, you know, better equip ourselves, because, you know, this is constantly, you know, like trying to secure a moving target, right? Like, you never know what it's going to do, like how it's going to react to different things, right? So, so these are some of the areas where we are putting a lot of our time and energy to research, and then come up with those controls that can, you know, fit into this, you know, like unpredictable reasoning things that the LLM is going to do. So that's how we approach, like we differentiate mainly, you know, focused on mimicking these capabilities, you know, and we just don't look at, like, hey, you know, here is the prompt, like, you know, scan for prompt injection, whatnot, right? That's a basic coverage, but that's not be good enough, you know, in today's real workflows.
Mm-hmm. That's what we were finding, is there wasn't a lot of robustness to protection, and especially, you know, you touched on it, but like when you have let's say we have just thinking about my product, right? Like when we do like a pull request review, it's very different from doing a full repo scan. Those are two different workflows. Like the PR one, kind of shorter batched work, you know, it's not super long running. But when you do like full source code repo, that's a very long task. And then when you say like, hey, I want to have that kind of deterministic-esque flow where it meaning it like follows some similar patterns or, you know, steps rather to get to wherever it needs to go and get whatever answers. It's like, that's where it gets really hard. Long running tasks that you want to behave similarly every single time. That's where this kind of, you need some robustness to protect that kind of long running task. There's another thing too, that I wanted to kind of get to, which is like MCP and MCP security, because I feel like when I talk to people, I mean, just to put it kind of out there, like when I talk to a lot of security practitioners these days, their company is either fully in on AI, or instead they're sort of getting into the waters and getting approval for like even using MCP internally is pretty tough because there's just not a lot of knowledge of it. I've heard it called the sort of API of the future. That's an actual verbatim phrase a customer had used at one point. And so, you know, if you guys could kind of run through the concept of MCP for our listeners and then kind of describe to them some of the major security gaps that you're, because you guys have written an MCP scanner, and I keep meaning to make a video of how it runs is because it's like really, really good, really, really good. So knowing your background, knowing you have that open source tool that you give people for free, it'd be very helpful for those listeners who are like more unfamiliar to get kind of a background here. So we're all on the same page.
Yeah, sure. So MCP is more like a USB dock for agents. So how we have like USB-C created, meaning like we have this one cable that can connect all the different devices to our, you know, to our laptop. So MCP is similar for agentic world. So before MCP, if an agent wants to talk to a tool out on public internet, it has to identify what are the different API schemas that it needs to integrate in order to talk to that particular service out there. But when with MCP, it's all simplified. The main purpose of MCP is to reduce the friction so that the agent can talk to outside APIs or like outside tools, and then do some processing in real time. So for example, now with MCP, everything is simplified. It's a standard API request with standard response format, the agent can use to talk to different services out there. So when you make something super easy to integrate with, it kind of opens up a lot of issues because more people started adopting it pretty quickly. So either they want to join the AI train or they are curious about MCP, so they just started integrating MCP without understanding what are the security implications that comes with it, right? When you integrate an MCP server with your agentic system, things like rug pull attacks or shadow MCP attacks or tool poisoning, memory poisoning, a lot of things can happen. For example, let's pick the rug pull attacks. So when you integrate an MCP server today, everything might look good. The tools that it provides, the data sources it provides, or the prompts that it provides, everything might be looking good. But 2 days from now, if the developer of that MCP server has some malicious intent, they might silently change the tool description to something malicious, or they might have like a malicious prompts, or they might have some malicious data sources. So the next time when you try to list the total number of tools from the server or the total number of resources from the server, you will get the legit tools as well as you'll also get the malicious ones. And then it can lead to a ton of different things. For example, it can even lead to data exfiltration, or it can even lead to persistence, or it can even lead to common execution, right? So these are some of the things that can happen with MCP world. So me and Mohan, when we started AIRA, we wanted to give back to the community. So we created an open source version of our MCP scanner called MCP Checkpoint. So we believe visibility is like the first layer of defense. People need to understand what are the different MCP servers their employee is talking to right now, or their agentic systems is talking to right now, right? So when you say employees talking to, they might be using Cloud Code or Cursor, agentic IDEs, and they might integrate their IDEs to these MCP servers, or they might have their own agentic CLIs running in their laptops talking to different MCPs out there, which might lead to some data exfiltration of sensitive information that belongs to the company, right? So these are some of the bad things that happen. So like I said before, visibility is like the first layer of defense. So basically, customers can use our open source tool. They can run our tool. Our tool will be able to identify all the known MCP configurations, starting from Cursor, Claude, like Gemini, OpenAI agents, all the well-known agentic configurations out there. It will check all those configurations, and then it will make a request to the MCP server, try to identify what are the different things it offers, like the tools, the resources, the prompts, right? And then it will check one by one whether it contains anything malicious, right? And then it will give like a very detailed summary saying that, hey, here are some of the agents, and here are the list of MCP servers this particular agent is connected to, and here are the list of tools, the prompts, the resources, and out of which, let's say, 2 out of 10 tools is flagged as malicious for XYZ category or something like that. So that people can take a look at it, and then they can figure out like what they can do to fix those gaps. We also have something called baseline, meaning today you can run a scan, you can perform a baseline, and then maybe a week from now you can also rerun the scan, try to compare it with the baseline, and try to see whether anything has changed from the previous point. So it always gives a nice comparison to understand how your employees are evolving or how your agent system is evolving, and how the MCP servers connected is also trying to evolve, right? So it kind of gives a very nice picture to the people who use our scanner.
I'm going to slow you down for a second, and I apologize, but you covered everything very, very well, and also very, very quickly. So I'm gonna go back and just make sure that I understand, so that the listeners understand each component. So just to say it out loud, MCP servers, why do they exist? You had mentioned that, you know, otherwise you basically have to give like Claude, for instance, Claude code, right? You'd have to give it kind of like a Swagger file, credentials. You'd have to tell it which of those API endpoints are doing that thing, and then it would call some RESTful API endpoints or GraphQL or whatever, and it would give back data, and then we use that to feed that data to the LLM, and then the LLM gives you back a response. So what it sounded like you said was, you know, this is a declarative, or this is us declaring rather what tools the server has available. So it's like an API server that's telling you these are the endpoints, but doing it in natural language, you know, in the format that MCP clients themselves can understand. And so once it's connected, registered, and gets that list of tools, the LLM can then decide based off the description of those tools, which is best to call. Is that pretty fair? That sounds like what you said, but I just want to make sure I'm repackaging correctly.
Yeah, that's perfect, Ken. Just, I would like to add like one more small addition. And even if there are some changes in future, like you have to go back, like you have to edit the Swagger file, and then like you have to get the agent again. But with respect to MCP, it's like all like auto done, because if the agent wants to talk to the MCP server, it will say, hey, give me the list of tools. Even if there are some changes, that MCP server will auto do all those changes and give it back to the agent. Like you don't have to do anything specific for the particular server or tool that you want to access.
Yeah, that's actually really helpful. Yeah, so it's just automatically, if there's any change on the tooling at upstream, immediately agents get the benefit of knowing about that change and being able to use the tool in whatever new form it's in.
Okay.
Sweet. So then you mentioned, okay, so then the second thing is that you mentioned sort of before you got an MCP checkpoint and what it offers, which by the way, I didn't know about the baseline, so I just looked at that. We'll talk about that in a second. Take that off the screen for a second. So then you mentioned like a bunch of different type of weaknesses. The ones that I want to hone in on are that I feel are pretty interesting, because this has been just an interesting one to describe. But you did mention like a kind of like excessive agency. I think you mentioned prompt injection. I think you mentioned maybe like I think you said excessive data as well, like more data than it should be returning. But I am interested, like in the, because you all would know more than I would. I believe it was GitHub, or it was somebody, maybe it was Anthropic and GitHub, or when their MCP server came online, wasn't there an issue where like the tool, like one tool could call another tool and piggyback off the permissions of another tool, like to get the information it shouldn't have had? So like, let's say, I don't know, you're looking at a dashboard that shows you like, three of your organization's 100 resources, but like it's got a secondary tool that can access the remainder of those other resources, whatever those other resources are, then the one tool that's only supposed to see three resources could then access the 100 resources, all 100 resources, and get information. Is that somewhat accurate or is that completely off? I mean, feel free to tell me. I don't really remember at this point.
Yeah. I would say like it's like super close, Ken, but I would love to add a few more details to that. It's called tool shadowing attack, meaning one tool is trying to call another tool in order to get some sensitive information from two-way. So with respect to GitHub example, what happened was the attacker they have created a pull request in a public repository, right? And then when the one of the repositories using an agent trying to review the pull request, so they have this malicious instruction as part of the code changes, asking the LLM to call the list of internal repositories which the agent have access to, and then take those code and then add it to the pull request comment. So the agent simply obeyed the instruction because it's a classic indirect prompt injection attack. So basically what happened was the agent, the moment it saw the instruction from the attacker, it kind of simply obeyed it. So it took all the internal public repositories and then it took pieces of code from the internal repositories, just added as a comment on the external public repository. Now the attacker was able to exfiltrate sensitive code from a private repository to a public repository, and just within like a few lines of code. So this was the issue that was published when GitHub published the MCP a few months ago.
You're saying prompt injection on the public repo, which led to the exfiltration on the private repo. Is that accurate?
Correct. That's right. Yes. Because the agent have access to both public and private repository, since there is like no way to detect prompt injections on the tool responses. For example, in this case, the agent developer says, go and review the pull request in the public repository. So the agent will call GitHub tool, something like get PR details or something like that. So now the agent will get the PR details, which becomes the context for the agent, right? So since the attacker have some malicious instruction, so we call it like indirect prompt injection. So now the agent simply obeyed their command, and it kind of called like get repository tool, which belongs to GitHub again. Using the private repository names, it kind of got all the code from those private repositories, and then it posted back to public repository by calling it another tool called post comment or something like that, and then the data was exfiltrated back to the attacker.
So the prompt injections is actually in the tool prompt itself, or the tool itself. It's not, and then that tool uses the permissions to migrate from private to data off of private onto public. I see what you're saying. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. Cause like I it's been a while since, so honestly, I don't even remember the details anymore. I feel like there was a slew of MCP server vulnerabilities and they all kind of mixed together when it initially got released. But thank you for clarifying that. So we have some of the vulnerabilities that are, available via MCP servers. Then the third thing is the MCP checkpoint. It's looking for those vulnerabilities, but can you, the baseline, it was cut. Let me pull this up too. I had it up a second ago. So I noticed that you have, sorry. And again, this is just open source free tool you gave to everybody. So anybody can download this and use it. But I saw somewhere there was baseline. Yes. Baselines created. So is the idea then with this baseline, you kind of do a differential on new changes to see what has changed and what new vulnerabilities could have been introduced?
That's right, Tim. Let's take a look at the rug pull attacks, which is nothing but, you might integrate an MCP server with your agent today, which might look legit. Like you can do all the manual validations and things. If everything checks out, like you'll just add that MCP server to your agent configuration file, right? But what if the MCP server becomes malicious 2 days from now? Because the developer decides they want to add something malicious, right? So that's where baselining becomes super crucial. So what happens with baselining is you try to run a scan today. You take a snapshot of all the MCP servers that your agent can talk to, and what are the different tools along with descriptions, parameters, et cetera, in the snapshot file. And then you can do like a baseline comparison scan on maybe like daily basis, so that tomorrow when you run the scan, just run the scanner in baseline mode, which will take the previous snapshot if 1% already, and then it will do a comparison. If something is either added or modified, it will let you know, hey, here are the different tools that was added that was not in the previous snapshot. So take a look at it manually and then try to re-approve it. Or if a tool has been modified or changed, we will let you know, hey, the description of this tool has been changed from X to Y. Does it look good to you right now? If yes, then you can say, add it to the, baselining part. If not, like you can skip that into the baselining part. And then finally, if there is like a new MCP server that was not vetted by you, but somehow added, then you can also do the same thing. You can check whether this MCP server is actually legit or not. And then if it's not legit, you can always go back to your configuration and then try to remove it. Because we have seen sometimes people might have added MCP server just for testing purposes, but they might have forgot to remove it. We heard stories from people like who used a scanner saying that, hey, we ourselves forgot that like we have added all these MCP related configurations, but with the help of your tool, we were able to identify all these things just because they were able to compare the baseline with the current scan.
This is great, right? Like it falls back to this traditional application security, right? Like who do you trust services, right? Like we're sending detail, you having the agent interact with all of these different capabilities. The second that one of those changes, there's nothing built into MCP that notifies you that, hey, that tool changed, right? Like what you thought was only accessing, so the example that we had previously, only accessing public repositories, now has access to private repositories. Okay, that like all of a sudden the threat model for using that agent completely changed, but without some sort of notification, you wouldn't know that, right? Like, yes, you're probably like GitHub's probably not going to change something like that on you, behind the scenes, but we've already seen similar things in like GitHub Actions, right? Somebody takes over a GitHub action and changes that action, or any of the, it's a software supply chain problem because we're putting so much trust into the MCP servers and the tooling that's behind the scenes without thinking through what it is we've actually done. So I really appreciate like the checkpoint, right? Like the MCP checkpoint, like that ability that, that capability that's in there, I know it's going to pop up more and more, right? It does feel like, in general, the security industry has been like, oh, MCP, well, we banged on that for a couple of months, so we've moved on now, right? Like, they're on to other things, like MCP servers, that's all been solved. So there's going to be a resurgence at some point, right? as we explore more and more of this. It'll be interesting to see how your tool evolves and grows over time. Yeah. Sure. So I do want to be cognizant of time because we are at top of the hour. I'm not sure, Ken, or if everybody has another couple of minutes for us to kind of wrap up the conversation here, or if we need to cut things earlier. Are we good to go for another few minutes?
I could go for another few minutes. Yeah, yeah. I think while we, yeah.
Okay. Mohan, yeah. Naveen, cool. You guys are okay?
Yeah.
Sounds good, sir.
Okay. We'll give it a few more minutes before we wrap up. What sort of adoption have you seen with that MCP checkpoint scanner? And it sounds like there has been some feedback on the baseline is very useful. But otherwise, like, what sort of interactions have you had around that or feedback have you had on it?
Yeah, we had several feedbacks across the globe. We are, super, impressed that we have one, member, like who's a director of an organization, reached out from Australia saying, hey, this is where you can improve the performance of, how... Because we, when the Python package is pulled, we do different things, and we also need to pull a model from Hugging Face. So, we got even a feedback to the detail of how the performance can be improved, and also from security aspects, like baselining is one of them, and also like few checks that we added based on the feedback. And we also got one particular feedback. It's another enterprise based in SF. So they found a real prompt injection issue in wild within their infrastructure after using the scanner. So we are actually, in fact, working to get a case study on that. We see, we get like a lot of good feedbacks and also like areas of improvement. So we are constantly, gathering and improving. So from an adoption angle, it's been only 2 months since we launched and, we have a little over 100 stars and more than 70 people, reached out to us, after trying with feedbacks in Slack and in LinkedIn. So we are pretty happy because at the end, like, we are just gonna give back to the community and while we focus on our enterprise grade version, this kind of help us to validate the path that we are taking and at the end, like, we are as Ken introduced us, like, me and Naveen are cyber practitioners who are who dealt with so many vendor tools, products, open source, and we always want to build something that we wish we had, right? So we have the DNA in our mind. Whenever we build something, hey, is this making their life easier or harder, right? Yeah. If it is making them harder, like, let's not build this. Let's go do something else or just take a vacation, right? Like, why wouldn't build something? And so we always have that in mind, and reducing the noise, false positives is a very key thing. And we put a lot of effort in fine tuning those open source models. And the adoption is great. We are thankful for the community from others who is giving feedback as well, Seth.
Yeah. Cool.
Good. Mohan's saying, like, if you're building LLM backed applications, then you're definitely building with agents. And if you're building with agents, then you definitely need to secure it. So it's like a no brainer. I love your business model. I just love that even more that you're actually like hardcore techies who actually care, and it's obvious. And I love that. So yeah, good job. So sorry, Naveen, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Yeah, no problem, Ken. I would like to add like one more point. We have like a couple of people like who are using MCP Checkpoint in their production pipeline. In fact, like, one of the feedback that we got from them was earlier, like, we used to have like only JSON output format, but they asked us to add like Markdown format as well so that they can take the output, give it to an LLM, and then auto cut tickets to Jira project so that they can immediately start taking actions whenever an issue is identified. So this was one of the feedback feedback, I would say like early feedback that we got from early adopters. Before we even open up the tool to public, we reached out to a few people, like few experts in the market. And this was one of the feedback that we got from them. And we added it, and now they are using our tool in production. And we have been hearing like a lot of great feedback and also a lot of features requested by them. So we will definitely release like more features in the upcoming weeks. We also have an enterprise version, so we are like a little bit careful not to put everything out there in the open source, but yeah.
And that's pretty standard. It just, you know, having that like taste of how the tool is built is, you know, it will always drive that enterprise side. And there are capabilities that people are going to look for. What I'm seeing more and more on the security tooling side is exactly what you are attempting to do there, right? Like, okay, there's certain functionality that anybody can go out and build with Python, right? Like, there just is. There's the stability of, okay, it's an open source project, it's being improved, it's being supported by an organization that provides the extra that an enterprise will need. And that seems to be the model that works well in the space, or at least it is one of the models that works pretty well. Cool. Let's see. Yeah, we are at about an hour, so I want to be cognizant of your time. I know that we could keep this conversation going probably for another hour or two at least, because there's a lot of other things that we haven't necessarily touched on as far as, you know, how you're inserting, how you're protecting, we've dug into the MCP server side of things, but there's a lot more that goes into these agents that I know would be an interesting discussion further on. So with that, if people have questions, where can they reach out to both of you or to Era Security to get those answers?
Yeah, absolutely, Sid. So yeah, people can reach out to us through LinkedIn. And also we will be at B-Site San Francisco and at RSA. We would love to meet people to understand really what is breaking in their environment when they try these agentic workflows, and we are seeing a shift in slowly moving these from an experimentation to the production stages. So and I think in this year 2026, as we progress, we will see more of those use cases, and we would love to talk and learn more and see if we can be of any value. So feel free to reach us through LinkedIn messages.
Okay,
it's open. So
yeah, I dropped your LinkedIn URLs into the show notes, right? So they will show up there. If any of the listeners would they're not seeing the show notes or whatever it is, please reach out in Slack as well. We can connect you, or we can at least like connect you on LinkedIn via Slack messages to make sure that, people are actually discussing. I'd also really be interested if any of the listeners, if you start to use the MCP checkpoint, what your feedback is, right? Like, share that out in Slack. That's always interesting to the wider community as well. So B-Sites San Francisco, we will see you down at B-Sites then. That'll be a good time. And otherwise, is there anything else that you would like to promote before we go ahead and close up the stream for today?
Yeah, totally. Thanks for listening. We always, here to learn in this fast evolving space. Would love to hear, your particular use cases and, see how we can, embed and bake in security in there. So,
yeah. Naveen, anything else from you?
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Ken, for this great opportunity. And like Mohan said, we are always open to listen to the industry problems that people are facing right now. So like me and Mohan, we believe security should not be a hindrance to the business. It's more like an enablement. We would love to hear their thoughts, their pain points, so that we can definitely try to come up with a product that can solve all their pain points.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yep. Great.
Thank you for your time. Thank you for giving us a bunch of information and a free MCP scanner. So,
yeah. Yeah, incredibly useful, and excited to see how things progress. As you release new features and, you know, have more problems that pop up or, you know, solutions that you come up with, happy to have you back on and to talk through that, especially from the practitioner perspective, right? Like, that's always of general interest to us. Both Ken and I are working on AI-based systems as well. So always happy to have that discussion, since it does help us, you know, in multiple avenues and helps others that are in the space and are listening. So, great. Well, thanks again. Ken, anything else before we go ahead and close things up for today?
No, just again, you know, thank you to you guys. Thank you to the listeners. And I guess the next things coming up are B-Sides, SF, and RSA, and KernelCon. Maybe not in that order. So anyways, yeah, it's going to be a fun time the next couple months.
Yep. Good times. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will catch you all next week.
Yeah. See you all. Yep.
Bye. See you.